This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 43.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In episode 42, I spoke about how to be a go-to person in your niche. So the kind of person or business that journalists are clamoring to talk to and clients are clamoring to do business with, because people are just so clear on what it is that you do and you stand for, and you've got a reputation for doing one or two things really, really well. So my guest today on the podcast is somebody who has done just that, or continues to do just that. I've got Patricia van den Akker, who is the director of the Design Trust, which is an online business school for designers and makers. And I spoke in episode 42 about how important it is not just to have a niche and not just to have one or two words that people immediately think of when your name comes up, but also about possibly niching down within your niche. And if you're from the US, you may be thinking, what's this niche business? You may well be thinking it should be niche, but here in the UK, we say niche. So I talked a little bit about how to niche within your niche. And this is something that Patricia's organization does really, really well. So it's an online business school, but it's specifically for designers and makers. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Design Trust is so successful, because the content that she creates, the value that she provides for her members, is really geared to people in specific industries. And Patricia and I, we have a really great chat about this. We talk about membership sites, we talk about building communities, about social media and how to grow online businesses and different streams of income that you can create. So it's a really, really varied chat, and I think you'll pull out an awful lot of useful stuff in this, not only in terms of how to promote your business or brand, but also how to build your business. There's just some really great stuff here. But before we get to the main part of the show, I just wanted to mention that I should still, when this episode goes live, I should still have some places left on my Soulful PR Group coaching program, which starts on April the 18th, 2016. If you're listening in the future, you may well have missed it. And essentially, I take a group of business owners, 12 maximum usually, through everything you need to do to get great media coverage. So everything from how to come up with great ideas, how to understand what journalists are interested in, how to put great pitches together, how to deal with journalists, how to find their details, all of that stuff. And essentially, I'll hold your hand. So through one-to-one coaching and group coaching, I'll be there to help you every step of the way to understand what's required and to look at your pitches with you, to look at your copy with you, whatever it is that you need to do to get you where you need to be. Now, generally, the kind of people who do the program are business owners. So I've worked with app developers, I've worked with authors, I've worked with psychologists, with leadership coaches, but I've also generally got some people on my programs who already work in PR and marketing. Generally, they're looking to upskill. So perhaps they're doing really well with local coverage, but they want to stretch themselves and move on to national coverage, or maybe they're looking to get coverage in specific titles. So they're just looking for a fresh angle, a fresh way of looking at things. So if that sounds of interest, I'll link to the coaching program in the show notes. I probably should have some spaces left still when this goes live, but you never know. But I'll link to that in the show notes so you can find out more. So now, on with the main part of the show. So joining me on the show today is Patricia van den Akker. Now, Patricia is a creative business advisor and director of the Design Trust, an online business school for designers and makers. I first came across Patricia on Twitter, and I was just so impressed by the wealth of resources and support that she offers to help people start and grow creative businesses. She has resources on her website on everything from how to find dream clients, how to set your prices, how to launch new products and collections. And so I really just wanted to get her on the show to talk about how she has built and how she promotes such a profitable and seemingly successful online business. So welcome to the show, Patricia.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Would you be able to start by telling us a little bit about your background, so how you came to do what you do today?
So I always say to people, it's kind of started very early on. My mom had a gift shop gallery in Holland. So from a very early age, I was surrounded by beautiful things. and love beautiful things. And at the same time, it was about selling and making that happen. My mom was very much the creative. My dad was very much the alpha male businessman, and he was the one about the money. And my mom used to indeed hide invoices in the freezer because then my dad wouldn't find out how much she had been shopping for the shop. But I would say indeed in me, the DNA from both my mom and dad of both being creative and being entrepreneurial definitely have been there from a very early age. Indeed, one of my other sisters runs a creative business in Holland, which is very successful. And then I studied graphic design. I did then arts management in Holland. And 22 years ago, I came to London. I got myself somehow a work placement at the Crafts Council. And basically, within 3 weeks, they offered me a job. And I phoned back home and said, I'm going to stay a bit longer. And 22 years later, I'm still here. And over the years, I've had a variety of jobs. I've been made redundant 4 times. And I always say that to people because it has been very much a kind of a patchwork, I would say, of different jobs. Indeed, like I worked at the Crafts Council for a couple of years. I worked for Robin Levine as a studio manager, who is a product design company, and very much worked there indeed on the commercial side of design. I worked for CEDA, the Cultural Industries Development Agency in East London, where I managed at that time 18 people. And there was a lot of money then available for training, and it was very much run as a non-profit organization. And then 5 years ago, I was approached if I wanted to take on indeed the Design Trust. And I had actually worked for Peter Levi, who set up the Design Trust 25 years ago. So it was great to sort of, being asked then by London Met, who had taken it over from Peter, then to actually indeed say like, okay, I want to take this on. They gave me a little bit of funding, but from a very early stage, I knew that I had to make this a kind of a social enterprise, which for me very much meant it's very important for me that it's about people, profit, and the planet. And that is very important for me as a social enterprise. But also we needed to get money in to run it as an organization. Because basically a lot of the funding that was available 5-10 years ago for business support has just all gone. And I knew that the business model needed to be a bit more entrepreneurial than indeed running it as a non-profit.
Right. And was the Design Trust, was it, because it originally was set up by London Met, was it set up to support the students there so that they would have...
No, it was originally set up by Peter Levi, and Peter was a journalist, a design journalist for Homes and Gardens a very long time ago, and she came across a lot of designer makers who didn't have a clue about like how to raise an invoice, how to sell your work, and we're talking now indeed about 30 years ago. And Peter set also up the New Designers Exhibition. And if there's any listeners indeed who have studied design or crafts in the UK, they might actually have shown at that show because it's the big graduate show. And for the last 30 years, because that show has been going for 30 years indeed. And so on the basis of that, she then set up the charity, the Design Trust, which was very much aimed at business training for designers and makers. And she also set up an organization that was originally called New Designers in Business, and that is now Design Nation, which also still exists, not run by me, but by the National Center for Art and Design in Lincoln. And they very much aim for a more the promotion, the marketing side. And indeed, they very often take part in group stands at trade shows, for example.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And so since you've taken on the Design Trust back in, it was 2011,
five years ago.
So what's changed? I mean, it looks to me, when you go onto your website, which is very impressive, you've created multiple streams of income, coaching, online courses, workshops, a membership community. What's changed since you took it on?
I think I brought quite a bit of energy into it, to be honest with you. And a kind of a realism as well. Like Peter, indeed, like in 2000, handed over the organization to London Met University, when they indeed then did a lot of workshops and things like that for the, mostly their graduates and their students. And then there were a lot of problems with London Met, and they indeed then approached me to take it over. And my organization is more or less online. So I do indeed like webinars, I do online courses, one-day workshops, for example. I do a lot of online group coaching, which I absolutely love doing. But indeed, like 5 years ago, I thought I wouldn't do any live workshops anymore, seeing people face to face. Because 5 years ago, There were a lot of major changes within business support and indeed, like, because of the recession, a lot less money was available. And people were indeed, like, then asking me, like, oh, Patricia, do you want to run a workshop? But by the way, we can't pay you, which I thought, okay, that's not going to work for me. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do this purely online because I thought it would be really interesting internationally because, of course, I can reach a far bigger audience. Also, it worked very well because I've got young kids or relatively young kids, especially at that stage. So again, I could work from 9 o'clock till 3 o'clock. I could work in the evenings. And getting bums on seats, so to speak, for running workshops was just really hard work because people were just 5 years ago not prepared to pay like £25-30 because there was before a lot of free advice available, so people weren't used to paying. And then indeed, like around 5 years ago, a lot of the funding changed, so all of a sudden there wasn't anything available anymore. And I have to say, in the last 2 years, what has been really interesting, and I definitely think that because I have got a good profile within my niche, I'm getting a lot more people now asking me again to run live workshops, to do live courses, and I'm regularly invited indeed to speak at events, at conferences, or indeed at universities.
Yeah, it's really interesting you should say that actually, because I think 5 years ago I was thinking the same about my business, and I was thinking I've always done lots of live workshops and events, and thinking I wonder if the appetite for this is going. But I've really noticed in the last few years that people, sometimes when I advertise an online course, people will come back to me and say, oh, that sounds really great, but are you doing it live? Can I come and meet you? They want that kind of interaction, I guess, that you don't get online. And like you, I have a coaching program and we do one-to-one coaching, we do group calls. And I, like you, I absolutely love it because it's kind of as close as you can get to that kind of, you know, sitting with somebody. But I guess there's just something, isn't there, about that kind of live experience that we all really benefit from.
It's two different things, and I like both, to be honest, because I will be honest, 5 years ago, I was getting a bit bored with doing the same workshops and running them, and maybe like 5 or 10 people would come up, and of course, high cost to hire my own venues, etc., and financially, it just didn't make a lot of sense, also because of traveling, etc., etc. I still think like life is great. It's great to see people face to face. It's the interaction between people, the networking. That's great, but I am a big lover of online because I can reach indeed like more people. I also get sometimes indeed like people from America, for example, talking at my webinars, which I think is great. And I couldn't do that kind of live. Let's be honest about that. And they bring a different angle to it, a different energy to it, I think. But also indeed, like what I find fascinating with like, especially when I do group coaching or when I do a 1 day online workshop, is like people can get really immersed. And also what I do a lot is not just talking and telling people like, do this, do that, but very much ask them questions and getting them to think. And then indeed, like by giving people time to think and they answer them in a text format, and I really get them to write it up. And it's very interesting, I think, when people have to answer questions in writing, it's a bit more like a diary or journaling, and they go really deep. And people very often say to me, like, gosh, I'm telling you things in this kind of quiet environment. Or if you're with a group of 5 or 6 people in particular, other people are opening up. That allows other people to open up. And they need very often say, I tell you things I wouldn't say to anybody else. Or it gets me thinking your questions. And I then, yeah, you have to write them down. And indeed, like people who live a long way from the big cities. I do a lot of work, for example, in Scotland. So again, it makes it a lot more easy to reach those people. But also very interesting is indeed like a lot of the people who consider themselves to be shy or introvert actually say, I really like this because people can't see me. I have this kind of yellow, because when you're doing work on the computer, you're doing online learning. What is fascinating is people do open up more maybe than in, if there's a workshop with 30 people. And it's always the noisy ones that take the stage, so to speak.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the kind of businesses that you work with and how you work with them?
So I sort of have, I would say, 4 groups probably. So I do quite a lot of work with graduates because most art colleges still don't provide a lot of business information. But I would say people very often come to me a year after they've graduated. They very often in the beginning think that they can do it themselves. I see them more like they come after a year, then they're ready to listen to some of the things I'm talking about. So graduates in like design, in crafts, animation, illustration, interior design, it goes a bit broader, but it's very much the visual creative, so to speak. Then a big group of my clients is what I would call the mumpreneurs. I don't really like that title, yeah. I have to say. Yeah, like although I'm a mother, I'm not kind of a mumsy, yeah, if you know what I mean. But very much, it's like what I would say, especially women in their late 30s, early 40s, who very often have got a marketing background, a legal background, very often have a husband with a good career. They have tried it and they just can't make it work with their family. And they have very often an interesting, innovative idea, very often related to children or family or a product like that. And very often they work in partnership. So it's very different. They have a lot more experience. They think a lot bigger within their businesses, very often within giftware, homewares. They very often think about like doing the trade shows and things like that. So that's a big group. And they have a lot of experience about negotiations, they have got a lot more money, they are ambitious, but they need it in an easier package, so to speak, but they need to still have like some of the financial grounding stuff. Then there's a large group of people who are designer makers, craftspeople, who are now in their 40s, 50s, have very much relied, I would say, on galleries. And of course, that whole market has changed. And they're now finally realizing that, of course, selling online or doing social media, that's not a fad. It's not going away. And if you're not selling through the galleries or through the shops, like what do you need to do? You need to work a bit harder on that. So I work a lot with people in their 40s and 50s around social media, online, and how do you sell individual creative products indeed online. So those are my three main groups. And then I have indeed, I work with creative organizations, studio spaces, for example, and those are more organizations. And for them, indeed, I either provide live workshops or I provide a combination of live workshops and online training. Mm.
It's really interesting there that you've got multiple streams of income coming in. And I mean, I know it's the same in my business. I do some kind of corporate consultancy. I've got a group coaching program. I do a little bit of one-to-one coaching. And like you, we'll talk about your membership program in a minute. I'm looking to develop more of a kind of membership community. But I guess to keep a business or enterprise ticking over, that's probably not the best phrase, but you do need that. You need to have those multiple income streams coming in. Is that something that you found?
Absolutely. I'm a big believer, like you need to be wide enough and tight enough, if that makes sense. Like I'm a big, big fan of a niche. So really doing something very well. Before, I was a lot more of a broader, creative, social entrepreneur kind of advisor. Now, I very much focus on those groups that I was just talking about. And then I talk a lot, not just about like what I do, but how I do things. So I talk a lot more about being practical, real life, entrepreneurial. I'm, for some people, probably a bit too entrepreneurial, too commercial. I work with a lot of the trade shows, for example. And I love that. And I think as a creative, you can be both creative and entrepreneurial. You need to be. And actually, being entrepreneurial can be massively creative and the other way around. I don't think it's one or the other. So I think you need a variety of things. But indeed, like I go deep in terms of indeed, like with my clients, and I can deal with people who've just started or haven't even started their business to people who've been going for 40 years and take them through the different stages of their business. And that means, yeah, there's a consistency there. I can really help people. That's the broadness of it. But I'm fairly, and like, I do everything within a business. And I really love that. I love connecting within a business. One moment, we're talking about the finances. But finances and pricing, which are big challenges for people, hasn't always got to do with money, but also indeed like with branding and positioning and marketing. So I love to jump around. Like how one element in a business has got a major impact somewhere else, for example, again. So I go bored with that again, but I am very much focused on a certain group of people. So for example, visual artists, I don't work with, and I've got other colleagues, and I'm very happy to refer people to them because I'm just not very good with visual art, to be honest. Yeah, I am more with the designer, makers, the gifter, and the homer. That's what I do. And I'm very happy, and I'm very aware of what other creative business advisors, coaches, for example, do. I do personally very little one-to-one sessions. I do them as part of a package, but I don't offer a coaching service, for example. But then again, I'm very happy to refer people to other people who do offer that or who might be a better match. So it's really interesting. It's being tight and being broad at the same time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it sounds like you know your audience really well and you really understand your niche. And what's your feeling on the things that your clients struggle with the most?
A lot of it is about confidence, to be honest with you. It's very interesting. It stems a lot about confidence. It's like, because as a creative, it is scary to go out there and to show your work. And yeah, we all have little voices in our heads. And it's the question, like, how much can you manage those voices? Because I think we all at times, yeah, struggle with that. It also can be very lonely to work for yourself, to self-motivate. I think for any sole trader or working for yourself, like now, yeah, it's a Tuesday morning, it's raining. Are you going to phone that client up? Are you following up some of those opportunities? Do you know where the opportunities are? I think those kind of things. And again, like if you have confidence, if you know what you're doing, if you have a clear vision, and if you've got, like, for example, a trade show in mind, or you have things that you can do, then there's a reason for you to actually work towards that. But a lot of creatives love the making bit, and they make and they make and they make. But actually, yeah, what you need to do is you need to market, 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 as well as make, make, make. Because otherwise, yeah, you're not going to create a sustainable business. And if you start to worry about money as a creative, that is a really quick killer to your creativity. And then the question, of course, especially the beginning stages, is like, is it worth it? Or is this a hobby? Or is this a business? So that's some at the beginning stages. But indeed, like, it's not easy to run your own business. You need a variety of very different skills that you need to learn, and you need to be proactive with that and have a certain level of self-belief and very strong self-motivation. And indeed, like for most businesses, creative or otherwise, it's like it takes about 3-4 years before, yeah, it starts to pay off, before you reach that break-even point. Yeah, that's really, really common. And like, indeed, like me, although I had masses of experience, I had more or less run other organizations doing your own thing. It took me a good 3 years before, yeah, indeed, my cost and my income were sort of stabilizing. And indeed, like if it hadn't been for my husband and a regular job and money coming in from him, it would have been really tricky to pull it off. And again, people don't necessarily think about the other elements that they need to do with your own business.
It's really interesting because I've noticed in my business, obviously I teach people how to get media coverage, but I'm realizing more and more, the more of this work that I do, that the emotional side of it is so, so important. And so I might have clients who come to me and they say, oh, I want to be in the Daily Mail, or I want to be in the New York Times, or I want to be in Marie Claire. But actually, emotionally, are they in the right place? Because I might start working with them and, you know, it's quite tough to do some of those things. And have they got the resilience to kind of, you know, keep trying when people are saying no to them? Have they got the confidence, you know, to accept that somebody might come and rubbish their idea? Or are they prepared to be out in the media spotlight? That's a big one for me. You know, are they prepared to have people writing maybe the odd nasty comment, or maybe more than the odd nasty comment, you know? So all of that has to be kind of taken into account. And I'm realizing much more that actually you're working with people on the emotional side, really, of running a business, as well as the actual kind of practical how-to side.
Yeah. And it's also, I think that is like, how do you want to be perceived? And like, indeed, like for me, like, like if I hear like about the Daily Mail and things and Marie Claire, I sort of would run a mile, if you know what I mean. And indeed, like when I, 18 months ago, I really rebranded the design trust, because we had been going for 3-4 years then, and it was time to kind of grow up a bit. And I got some really great advice from a strategist around online selling. And one of the best tips she gave to me was, Patricia, like, two things. One is, if you want an online business, you need to show you as a person, because a lot of online businesses, they are very kind of grey. They all look very similar. And she said, especially online, it's very anonymous kind of way of doing business. So you need to put your face on there a lot more. And the other thing was indeed, like, looking at my competition, the designers I know looks a lot bigger because, yeah, it sounds really grand, like I'm the director, but the reality is it's me with 5-6 freelancers. Like, I am the finance manager, I'm the tea lady and everything in between. And what I really learned when I was talking with this expert about online selling was, like, indeed, like, my competition are a lot of non-profit organizations, funded organizations with 20, 30 people very often. And I felt a bit like, oh, I'm less worth than them. And she pointed really out to me, like, Patricia, you have a voice. You approach things when it comes to creative entrepreneurship in a way that's more real than people who get, a paycheck at the end of every month and don't have to, run a business like your clients do, And once I got that, like, because I discussed it with her, because I said to her, I don't want to be famous. I'm not a celebrity. I really hate that culture. I barely watch television, to be honest. I'm quite sad like that. But, like, we tried to figure then out how I wanted to be perceived and what to me was important and what was important for my clients. And to me, it was indeed about, like, I want to come across as knowledgeable but practical. I want to come across as a thought leader. And in a way, it was a bit like, and you don't really say that, especially as women, we're not taught, it's always like be the nice girl. You don't say things like this. But for me, it was really important to actually say, like, hey, I am bright. And I'm proud of that. And I might be a bit geeky. And, like, people laughed at me when I was at primary and secondary school because I wore glasses. And, like, I have my hang-ups about that. But it was really good to sort of get this feel of, like, what kind of role I wanted to play. And then it became a lot more like, I do want to be a spokesperson. I am passionate about teaching people this stuff. If I can see that people fly with a little bit of my input, that gets me really excited. That's my job satisfaction. And if I'm holding back on that, I'm doing a disservice. It's not about just like, oh, for me to make money, but it is about planting those seeds in people and then getting things happen, if you know what I mean. And once I started to see that, I have become kind of bolder about, speaking my mind. And that means that sometimes you upset people. I don't mean to, but, like, that sometimes happens because people don't like it, for whatever reason. But I've become more comfortable in my own skin. And I know my strengths and my weaknesses, and I can share my own experience. And I think people really love that in an advisor.
Yeah.
Who knows what she's talking about. And it's not just in theory that I'm running my own business, but I can also show, like, hey, hang on a minute, I don't have £1 million marketing budget, but look what I can achieve. If you put in the hard work, you can do that too. And I think that's hugely beneficial.
And it's a really interesting point, because the brand strategist that I've worked with, Phil Pallon, I interviewed him in episode 9 actually, and he always talks about branding as being is you want to kind of make the online experience pretty much the same as the offline one. So you want to feel like, I want to feel like when I come to your website that I'm getting the pretty much the same experience I get if I met you in person, and are very similar. And the closer, he says, you can get the two together, the better your branding is going to be, because it's really authentic. And like you say, that might mean, he picked up something on me actually. He said, I'm quite no nonsense about it. And I didn't really think I was particularly, but, I started to talk to him and I was saying things like, well, there's no nice way of saying this, but if you go that approach, you're not going to get any press coverage, or, journalists aren't interested in your business. And he picked up that I was being quite kind of no nonsense and straight and whatever. But that is totally true. And I would say that if somebody met me, and I think it's really important to kind of marry the two. And so something else I wanted to ask you about actually was, I want to ask you first about your membership community and how that came about.
So at the very beginning, when I launched the Design Trust, I fairly quickly launched the membership. And there was kind of two reasons for it. It kind of made sense. Also, I didn't want to have ads on the site. I wanted to be really again, like probably being honest, yeah? And like, I didn't want potentially any kind of problems. Also, of course, I probably couldn't have had any ads anyway, because at the beginning, the traffic was, of course, so low. But 5 years ago, it was the thing, like, how do you make money online? Was through ads or a membership? Of course, with the membership, because I had done a lot of workshops, I thought, like, okay, I can deliver 1 hour sessions, and that works very well. And the other thing, a really main reason, to be honest with you, was like when I started out as a freelance advisor, one of the main challenges for me was actually that I very much had peak and troughs in my income. Yeah. So for example, in August and December, January, I just didn't get any money. Yeah. And then other months I was really, really busy. And one of my reasons indeed, yeah, sounds a bit kind of practical and pragmatic, but it was by having a membership, I could make it affordable. I knew that if I got the numbers through, it would be very profitable, but also it would be a more regular income. And it definitely has proven that, because now, indeed, like, we've had a fairly static membership for the last year or so, and I want to increase it a bit more again. But, like, we've had around 200 business club members paying a monthly or annual membership every time. And that really works. And also, you build up a relationship with that group of people, because they are, in a way, the closest to you. And they very often give me ideas about new things that I want to learn about and things like that. And that's very important for me to the membership too. But also, it's like it only costs 14 quid a month. And what I now find is that people, because there's a whole range of webinar recordings, video interviews, podcasts, etc., people can very much dip in and dip out when it suits them, because people are busy. Yeah, when you're like pre-starting your business, you want to do a lot of research, you want to read everything, you want to watch everything, you sign up for loads of newsletters. But after 3 years of doing your business and it is going somewhere, you're too busy to do a lot of workshops. Yeah. You cannot follow everybody on social media anymore. So what I have found with the membership really interesting is, again, like they grow with me, is that now indeed it's not as much people who are very much at the start of their business, but very much people who are between 3 and 10 years old as a business, because what they love is like, oh, this kind of idea, like, what will Patricia say about that topic? Because I've got now such a wide variety of those topics, and they just sort of dip in and dip out, and they might just want to see one or two webinars a month or something like that, but that's plenty for them, because they haven't got the time, because they're running a business. Thank you very much.
And what do you offer them for that, what, £14 a month then?
So basically what they get a newsletter, but most of it is indeed like I add 2 webinars per month, and they can watch more than 100 webinar recordings, which are basically an hour each. And a lot of them now connect with each other, so they can go through a whole range of indeed webinar recordings. And it goes from pricing and costing and financial management and how to do your tax return to confidence, yeah, to social media, how to do Pinterest and Instagram and pricing and costing and everything you can think about, how to sell to retailers, how to sell on Pinterest. So very broad.
And I guess the biggest barrier for lots of us who want to set up membership sites, and it's certainly something that I want to do this year, is thinking about the practicalities and how you're going to host it, where you're going to host it, how you're going to sign people up, how are you going to take their money, how are you going to keep in contact with them. How's that all work for you?
It's really interesting, because when I was at that stage, the technical aspects really worry you. And actually, that's easy. Because there's a couple of softwares that you can use. And of course, they constantly improve, etc., etc. And like, you just compare the different kind of softwares which allow you to do different things. And actually, the technical thing, it's good, because there's very few people competing with me, because a lot of people think that that's a really scary thing. And in the end, of course, I had to learn new kind of technical skills, and how to run a webinar. It was also a huge investment. If I wanted to do webinars, that's like 90 quid a month. So I knew I needed to make it worth the money, like you either do it or you don't do it. So that really opened for me, like, okay, if that's the investment, I need to make the most of it. But to me, it's like the technical issues and challenges are quite easily and quickly overcome. For me, it's more like, how do you continue? Like, for example, after 18 months, I was a bit like, okay, I now have run out of ideas of topics. That was the problem. As in, okay, what do I need to do? And then it became great to get other people involved again. And then I found again, like, oh, hang on a minute. And I opened sort of another drawer where there were loads of ideas that I had that we could do. But like after 18 months of doing a whole range of webinars, it was like, okay, I'm running out of ideas here. What am I going to do? And you learn, like I launched indeed, like my clients said to me, like, we really want a forum. And I went through that at great expense. And actually, I'm really thinking about stopping it because, and again, it's really interesting. I think people at the beginning stages of a business are really keen on talking about what they're thinking about and maybe sharing some ideas. But once people have been going, one, they don't have the time. And two, it becomes confidential information. You're not going to share, some of your questions. And let's be honest, a lot of us want to look good, So they will share with me their problems, but that's confidential. They're not sharing that on a forum. So for example, although they all said that they wanted a forum, once I launched the forum, it didn't really take off. Yeah, so again, it's like you need to do different things and indeed like, I've been running the membership now for over 4 years. But then I also realized that some people don't want to do a membership. They don't want to commit. Although people can leave anytime, because basically it's done on a monthly direct debit. So if they cancel with PayPal, it's very easy. No problem. They don't get access. Easy for them, easy for me. So if they get their act together and they would only be a member for 1 month, for 14 quid, if they have a bunch session or whatever, of like 100 hours of business advice, that would be possible. But very few people actually do. But like, but what I realized then was that some people just want a one day. And like, so indeed, like last year, I started to introduce the one day online workshops where in one day we do 4 hours of training. And then indeed in between we do, I give people homework and then at home they do that kind of work. And that seems to work for another group of people who have an issue and then want to solve that issue in one day. And that's a slight again, the content might be the same, but the format is different. And then they feel like, okay, in one day I can learn and they can ask my questions, etc. That can really work for another group.
I guess it's really, it's just being able to provide a kind of variety of options, but sort of broad but narrow, like you say, at the same time. And it's really interesting what you said about the forum, because I belong to a membership community, which is, forums were all the things. I launched a forum back in, I think it was 2000, and it was for freelance journalists when I was primarily just doing journalism. And it was really popular because there was nothing like that out there. And, it really was very, very popular and I should have monetized it. I didn't really think to at the time. I just kind of, took what I could take from it and love building the community. Now I use Facebook groups and I just find that works so much better because people are on Facebook, people who like Facebook, and not everyone does, are on Facebook all day anyway. So they're hopping in and out. And funnily enough, this big membership site that I belong to, I think they realized that actually having a Facebook hangout was probably going to work better for their members. And I almost think forums are maybe, they're a bit kind of 90s maybe. And now we've moved on so much. And that's the thing, isn't it? And I guess when you spend money on things like that, I'm not sure I would do one again for that very reason. And also what you said about the kind of people growing up as well, because I find with my Facebook groups that I'll have a core of people who at any one time might be really, really, active. And then their priorities change and they move on and their business grows and then a new crop of people will come in. And it's about kind of keeping that going, isn't it? And kind of keeping that, keeping with that group. So it's all really, really interesting stuff.
And it's like some people stay with you for a long time and sometimes you wonder like, hey, why are you still a member? Because like sometimes it feels a bit that people, because they are a member of, like, for example, the Design Trust, by osmosis, like stuff starts to happen in their business. Like, and I'm afraid to say it doesn't work like that, but sometimes people kind of think that. And like different people at different stages. And that's something I'm really interested in and indeed doing some research in. It's like before you start your business, then the first 18 months, then 18 months to 3 years. Yeah, there's very specific growth spurts, I would say, within a business. And I think at different stages, you need different things. And that to me is really like, again, really getting my clients and responding to that, and the psychology of what does it take you to run a business. But also what I really love is like, what are you avoiding in your business? Because I'm very good in asking really awkward questions. Yeah. And indeed, like originally I was an advisor, and as an advisor, I would tell people like, do this, do that, do that. Yeah. But now I'm really asking a lot more questions because again, like creatives are a bit stubborn anyway. They don't agree to everything you say, would question it anyway. But it's also indeed like by asking questions and then helping people to find their own answers, the chances of them actually implemented change, because that's a really tricky one. If like back to what you were asking earlier, what is tricky is actually making change happen and making time for change, because especially if you've been running your business and then 3 years in or 5 years in, you want to rebrand, for example, or do a new website, that's a big undertaking. Yeah, and like especially if you have already, you do your work and there is a bit more money hopefully coming in, but then to make time to make those major changes in your business or taking somebody on, for example, it is easy to say like, oh, let it be, like it will be all right. It takes a lot of guts to then indeed say, no, I want to make those changes. And that is indeed like the difference between, again, businesses that will be okay-ish, hopefully make a bit of money, and the ones that are going places. But it takes a lot of guts to make time for those bigger changes. And again, confidence, again, a bit of money, but also having the willpower to do that. That's tough.
And how do you find your clients? What are the different methods that you use to get people to come and start working with you?
It really started very much, I would say, on Twitter. And like, so 5 years ago, I was introduced to Twitter. And to be honest with you, in the beginning, I wasn't that interested because I sort of got it all confused and I thought it was about like pictures of coffees and stuff like that. But then what was interesting, and this might make me sound like a really bad mother, but at that time, I had indeed a toddler and like a preschool girl. And basically, so I picked them up from nursery. And then like after 3 o'clock, I couldn't do phone calls. I couldn't really do an email because I had to be in the same room. But like, sitting next to them, watching CBBC, let's be honest, I got a bit fed up. And I started using Twitter and it just took off. And very quickly, I had 1,000 followers. And then within a year, I had 10,000 followers. And then in the second year, 25,000 followers. And now, 4 years later, I've got over 50,000 followers. And like, to me, it works because it's fast. And to me, it has helped me to drive a lot of traffic because, of course, I was blogging while I wasn't really aware I was blogging. It was really like for the first 6 months, I was writing articles online. I didn't realize I was a blogger and I still don't really consider myself to be a blogger, to be honest. But like then again, using Twitter to connect to specific pages, asking questions and asking the kind of questions that my clients ask, put that on Twitter and then put it out. And indeed, like for me, I was probably, because I'm in my mid-40s, I was a bit too old for Facebook. I didn't grow up with Facebook. And I still find Facebook tricky. I'm not, like Facebook people are a bit more chatty. And what I love about Twitter is indeed like the humor on it. You need to find and follow the right people to find it. The humor sometimes, I have to say. But indeed, like following the right people that matter to you, follow your, people that you are interested in, the journalists, the buyers. And indeed, like now I follow a lot of people and I find fabulous images and new work. I found a lot of people indeed in America. So a couple of my partners I'm working with is purely because of Twitter, because they were operating again in my niche. And that's again, like if you know what your niche, what your area of interest is, then it is a lot easier because Twitter, to start with, it's so ginormous and you don't know. It's a bit like somebody indeed explained it to me. It's like Twitter is, it's like this cocktail party that goes on. And like, I'm not very good with cocktail parties or networking, but like why Twitter works for me is that I'm following people within my field and then see articles that I think are interesting. And indeed, like more than half of my tweets are about what other people do. It's like I'm broadcasting stuff that I find interesting. I might comment on it and say, this is beautiful, or hey, this is interesting. And indeed, like, what really suits me, again, it can be one moment, an article about what the government is doing with the arts or around creativity in schools, for example. The next moment, it might be a picture of a beautiful vase. Yeah, and like the next moment, it might be, I don't know, a Harvard Business Review about creative business models. Because it's all those things that interest me. And again, that really, I don't know, probably works for my brain. Because it is fast, you can't waffle, it's 140 characters. Within half an hour, your tweet is gone into into the black hole of Twitter world. But that's why it works for me. And I think it's I find a lot of opportunities on there. So indeed, like our newsletter, a lot of the listings come actually from Twitter. I work a lot more with journalists. And indeed, the press, like 5 years ago, it was impossible to get hold of press, yeah? But now they're on Twitter and you can build up a relationship with people on Twitter. And especially if you're on a regular basis on there, it can really work. And it makes you then, that is why my profile has increased with the people that matter. And therefore, indeed, larger organizations like Etsy or indeed like the British Library want to work specifically with me. Because they know I have that profile within that group of people. And then that becomes very, very interesting.
And do you have a specific content strategy that you follow, like a number of posts or when you post? Or it sounds like it's fairly spontaneous, which is nice.
Like I have a kind of, I know what I want to do within a year, to be honest with you. I know what my topics are. And I do that. And I don't do too many personal things. I don't start talking about the EU referendum and what I think about that, because I think I might lose quite a lot of my followers. I don't get involved with what is happening, for example, in the American elections, because again, I've got a lot of American followers. You need to be careful. But indeed, like I know what my topics are. And like, again, like at the beginning, one of the things that I really learned with blog posts, the advice out there is saying like post twice a week. And I was giving myself a really hard time because I couldn't do that. And again, then a year and a half ago, when I was talking to this online expert who gave me advice about the branding, she said, like, Patricia, check, you need to really do a thorough checkup of like, what have you actually got on your website? And I realized then I had 150 blog posts and I hadn't actually realized that. To be honest, I was like, oh. And what was then interesting, she said, okay, map them. Where are the gaps? Which blog post should go from A to B to C, yeah, or Z or whatever? And she said, what you need to do a lot more is actually, because I had sort of 100 blog posts out there. And she said, what you need to look at is like which one refers to which one and what should people read first and then next. And that really helped me. And I could find the gaps. And then what happened is I had a massive increase in people reading it. And it became more logical. And now I might write one blog post a month, to be honest.
Yeah. It's really interesting because it's something I've been thinking about a lot recently. I'm thinking of going to one a month myself, but writing much more detailed, much more kind of in-depth stuff. Because I've realised that people, the really great blog posts that I've written that people come back to time and time again, some of them are a couple of years old, but they still, you know, they still cover that ground people want. So.
And again, it's like promote your blog posts, yes? Yeah? So every new blog post I do now is indeed like I put it out to my newsletter audience. And indeed like on Twitter, like every day I put blog posts that I might have written like indeed 3 or 4 years ago. And people still say, wow, this is fabulous. And I sort of smile because that took,
an hour, four years
ago. But like what I see a lot of people doing as a mistake, they write more and more and more. But what you actually need to do is leverage your content. And indeed, like make sure that you're answering questions, for example, for your audience. Because again, for SEO, that's the kind of stuff people are Googling for. And that's what works a lot more. And like for me, like, I wanted to become more creative also with my blogging, my newsletters, for example. So indeed, like, for example, this week I'm launching a blog post series, so to speak, 4 sessions. I put one out yesterday. I'm going to put out another one on Friday, then another one on Monday. And I sort of suspend the story and I do it on email, and then you get a response because people start tweeting about it, people start sharing it on Facebook. And that is when something really interesting happens. And then I might not do anything for like 3 weeks. And I think that can, and sometimes writing, like, I'm known, yeah, I have written blog posts that are 5,000 words. Really in depth and really, I think, very useful, very thought-provoking. But I also have blog posts with like 100 words. And I think that is, again, be creative, be more interesting.
Mm. It's interesting because I just shared one of your blog posts in my Facebook group before because somebody was asking the question about you just started doing some PR work. Somebody wanted to know how much you charged to do a press release. And that's for a whole other episode, but press release and to do some PR for them. And she was saying, I've just got no idea what to charge because I've not done this before. And so I actually sent her one of your articles, which was about sort of, it was more to do with like pricing products and things, but actually the whole concept was the same. And that question is just a question that just comes up again and again and again, isn't it? And it's never going to go away. Like, you know, how do I price my stuff? What do I charge people? How do I get paid? How do I make sure people don't take me for a ride? And, you know, all this kind of stuff is going to keep coming up. And this is just all such fascinating stuff. We could go on for ages, but I guess I ought to let you...
Keeping an eye on the time.
Yeah, I ought to let you go. But I mean, one last little thing I wanted to ask you. You mentioned that Twitter had been great for you attracting clients. What are the other main ways? It sounds like you've got a newsletter. Have you built up an email list?
Yes, I've definitely got an email list, and I would say, like, social media for me is really great for profile building. It's really great to stay in touch with people, and you need to look if it is Pinterest or Instagram or, yeah, whatever works for you and your group. I think that's really important. You don't have to do them all because that would drive you nuts. But that is, for me, the first stage in the way of marketing. It's a bit like the flirting stage. If you
right, okay,
for
yeah.
me, marketing is very much about building relationships. But if you then want to build that relationship, and my core around marketing is very much people only buy for people they know, like, and trust. And when it comes to social media, the knowing, yeah, getting to know you is really key there. But, like, it is very much through good email marketing, not necessarily newsletters, because let's be honest, nobody signs up for a newsletter. It sounds boring, it sounds spammy. But you need to make sure that you educate, that you entertain, that it is useful what you do. And like indeed, like with my email newsletters, I get an opening rate of like between 40% and 50%, which is incredibly high. My WordPress developer always says, like, Patricia, like, you're by far the highest with all the people I deal with. But that is, again, like, I don't call it a newsletter. I ask a question in my subject line and then answer that question. And I drive them to my website and I try to be useful. I try to serve people and I ask questions of people. And again, that gets people more interested and entertained. I don't try to sell them stuff. Yeah, and again, I think that is really important. And then, of course, like, once in a while, you can send them an email where you're selling things. Yeah, and I'm not doing this entirely for you, but, like, you're selling more. This is my knowledge. This is how I operate. So that, indeed, like, for me, people start to trust me or start to remember me because I said something that rang a bell with them. And that is how you build that up. So
It's content marketing, isn't it? It's kind of, yeah, if you're serving people, you're sharing useful stuff with them, they might not have a need at the moment, but when they do, they'll know where to come. So
that's the point.
Exactly. Oh, that's so brilliant. Thank you so much. You've given so much value and so much to think about. We could talk about this stuff for hours. It's fascinating. but where can we find you?
So I am www.thedesigntrust.co.uk, or indeed find me on Twitter twiggly thing, The Design Trust. So
brilliant. I'll link to those in the show notes. So thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely fascinating.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, do head over to the show notes at janetmurray.co.uk/episode43. That's janetmurray.co.uk/episode43.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.